And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. Thank you for being with me today. I am very excited about today's show, as I usually am, because I love my job. So there you go. You know, I also have been studying Jeremiah 17 off and on for years and years because I love this chapter. And if I look at starting in verse 5, it says, "This is what the Lord says. Cursed is the one who trusts in man, who draws strength from mere flesh, and whose heart turns away from the Lord." But then you jump down to verse 7 and it says, "But blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him. They will be like a tree planted by the water that sends out its roots by the stream. It does not fear when heat comes. Its leaves are always green. It has no worries in a year of drought and never fails to bear fruit." I love that, and I love the show. I'm looking forward to getting my guests on the show today. I've got Jean Sonny Revolt coming on, and you're going to be absolutely delighted with his story. And then I've got Lonnie Evans and his daughter, Elena. They adopted Elena when she was just a young child, and she's got quite a story, quite a passion for ministry and for evangelism. And then Pastor Jay Abramson, all the way from Valley Community Church in Avon, Connecticut, will be joining me as well. That is ahead. I cannot wait. Let's take a little break and get the show rolling. Welcome back to the show. You know, you never know who you're going to run into at the studios here at the University of Northwestern. And I just had the pleasure of running into a gentleman that I've invited into the studio. And I can't wait to hear his story. His name is Jean Sonny Revolt. Right there, you want him on the show, don't you? Just the name alone. I'm thinking about changing my name to Bill Revolt. How cool would that be?
Oh, goodness.
Sonny, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Now, tell me where you are from.
I'm from Haiti.
Haiti. Okay.
Yes. Haiti, and, Gracie.
Say it again?
Gracie, like Haiti, but Gracie, this is the community where I came from.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you've been in the U.S. for how long?
I came November 14th, just last year of November.
Okay.
So I'm just brand new to the cold, but
yeah.
Love it.
This is your first winter, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
we brought it on for you.
You guys
we spared
are crazy.
Nothing. Yeah.
It's hard.
So what were you doing in Haiti? And I can't wait to hear what God has been doing through you over in Haiti.
First, church, you know, helping. I was a deacon too, like
nice.
Helping in church,
mm-hmm.
and I was working with kids ministry, and also I was helping, you know, radio, the Radio Lumiere, that's the name of the radio, and I heard a program going on where they teach English, they use English to spread the gospel with people, so I went there and volunteer and, you know, do it too, so just helping.
Yeah, so you were a deacon at your church, and you found that God was giving you an opportunity to use your ability to speak English and your native language, which is...
Yes. Creole.
Creole.
Mm-hmm.
Could you say John... Do you know John 3:16? Do you know that verse?
Sure, but I know it in French easier. I don't know.
Well, let's hear that. School. I want to hear that.
Just Jean 3, verset 16, car Dieu a tant aimé le monde qu'il a donné son fils unique. Afin que quiconque croit en lui ne périsse point, mais qu'il ait la vie éternelle.
So how many languages do you speak?
I can say I speak three fluently.
Nice.
But I speak some Spanish. I speak Creole, French, you know, English, but
yes.
More French than English.
Yes.
I speak some Spanish as well and a tiny bit of Portuguese.
Mm-hmm.
So.
How is the gospel being received in Haiti?
Is tough.
Yeah, I bet.
Because there are a lot of tough situations going on. But... you know, through it all, we were trying to help, you know, like, especially my church. I know, too, like, it's been very challenging. Even me, before I go to church, it was tough. Like, long story short, like, for me to go to church, yeah, it's, I don't know what to say, but I would say, like, yeah, it's tough. It is tough even to, for people to go out and spread the words to to others
mm-hmm.
when their life, you know, sometimes they are not a great example. So, I don't know. It's,
yeah.
I don't know. It's a long story.
Yeah, I know you left in November.
Yes.
But I don't know exactly what's been going on recently. What are some of the upheavals that are happening in Haiti?
July 7th, 6th, 7th was a big deal. No moving. There was a riot, like unrest going on. Recently, we had like 11 days where nothing going on. It's like, people are asking, like, to get a job. Like, 80% right now don't work.
Wow.
We can't find water. We can't get water,
mm-hmm.
like potable water. So think of it. You're not working. What's going to happen? You know, It's tough. You know, how can you preach to those people? How can you tell them, like, Christ is alive? Like, take Christ. How can you when they're, like, they're suffering?
Yeah, their circumstances are so bad, aren't they?
It is crazy.
Where is God in all my suffering, right?
Some people
are
saying...
Does God care?
I can say.
And I know you can.
Because I've been through a lot. Think of it. When I was 2, my mom passed away.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
13, 14, I was on my own. Gambling to pay my school. Think of it. Playing poker to pay my school.
At 13?
Yeah. 13, 14. And then on, you know, and just think of it. Living with voodoo priest at some point. Used to help people through...
You said voodoo priest?
Voodoo priest.
You were living with voodoo priest.
I was working. They have a boutique. I was helping with that too. They have construction going on. I was helping. They have voodoo stuff going on too. I wasn't doing it.
Right. Of course.
Thankfully,
yes.
Maybe it was about to be a lot harder for me to get out of it. So yeah, I was on my own. I was on my own. I paid my school myself. It was challenging.
So you must be pretty good at poker.
Brother, I am telling you. It's a different type of poker from what I heard from here.
Uh-huh.
But I was kind of the master. Like, to pay my school, you know, I used to play poker. I have cards, like a lot of cards.
Yeah.
People came over to play, and I take some money out of them. I play with them. We fight.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good thing to keep in mind. I used to fight quite a bit.
Like throw punches and stuff?
Oh, a lot.
Really?
I couldn't use my right arm. Like, this was swollen because I punched someone so hard. It was tough.
Yeah.
So
I'm getting the picture. It's tough.
I mean,
so
I don't know.
Sonny, how did you end up coming to meet Jesus?
Long story short.
Well, you can make it long. You don't have to make it short.
Cool. I was, you know, when I was in 7th, 5th grade, and I used to hear about Christ and decided to, you know, learn English too. And I said, okay, you know, people were talking in English, and I was like, okay, what are they saying? I couldn't understand what they were saying. Decided to go to an English class, and from there came the earthquake,
mm-hmm.
and the house collapsed. Nobody knew what was going on because we were in there. They were like iron at the top of different type of, I would say, house. We could hear the noise and run out, and the house was just, you know, collapsed. And when we got out, like, okay, now, what's next? I said, okay, I'm sure there's something I should understand right there. Going to church, not giving my life to Christ, it was okay. But if I don't do it, why not? Like, it's a big reason to.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I quit playing poker, quit living with the, working with the voodoo priest, not one, even two. Selling bread, that's one thing I didn't say too. You say, going to school, coming back, playing poker. You know, this is just after I decided to go to school. Playing poker, in English class, go sell bread. For me to study was at night. So I don't know. I just come up with a lot of stuff. So I hope I don't, you know, change things. And, you know, and from there I decided to and go to church. And I asked the pastor, like, you know, I want Christ. And then, you know, they pray with me. And I accept to be baptized. And you know, they want to help. That's how I started with kids ministry. I said, my heart is to help. Like, I like to be a blessing to people around me. Mm-hmm. If I'm not, I'll feel like bored. Like, I don't like being with myself. I don't like being alone. That's one thing to keep in mind. Like, no, I like being with people. We have fun. It's okay if you hurt me or I hurt you. I'll ask for forgiveness and, you know, just build relationship. That's me. And even at church too, I said, a deacon called me and said, you know what? A lot of us miss you because it's crazy how they didn't understand how important really you were. You know, I was. They, you know, they honor it. Before I came here, they did a lot of things for me. But they said, really, they talk about you a lot in meetings and stuff. So coming to Christ is, mm-hmm. because of the earthquake. And I said, here I am.
Yeah. You've mentioned ministry a couple of times. Can you talk about that, please?
What we do, we went to Christianville Church. They call it Christianville. A couple mm-hmm. came to Haiti, a couple American, Carol and Erget. They came there and they saw the spot. Nothing was going on, a lot of trees, and they decided to build a school to help just for Christ too, and now having seven churches. But me, I saw that they need people to help with the kids, and I said to myself, okay, the kids will be the one in charge of church tomorrow, so if we don't invest in them, how that's going to be? So I just said, okay, I'm okay to not being too much part of things at church. I'm okay to help with them. And then I just decided to go and mostly teach myself stuff and go through the internet, and, you know, and then they love it. And there was a lady, I can't remember her name for some reason, started teaching me some and having learning about, like, through images, how to teach the Bible, you know, teach it where there's, if you don't have the Bible, how, you know, stories, learn stories and stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, yeah, do stuff like that.
And so you've got a lot of Bible stories memorized, and you can teach them. And
I'm telling you.
And maintain
you have to
the interest
sometimes.
Of the kids, hold their interest.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's not easy, is it?
Oh, it's tough. Sometimes you have to stay up, you know, like, okay, God, how that should be. Like, they're going to be kids. Like, they're going to be a mess. Think of it.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, little time you can just spread the gospel, you know, give them the word. Like, just put it in their mind so that they can keep it in the future to help,
yes,
you know, their environment, their classmates, you know, be a better person or people, you know, where they live. So.
Yeah. You're planting seeds.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And putting the word of God into their little hearts and minds and letting the Holy Spirit then take over, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take a little break. I'm speaking to Jean Sonny Revolt. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. You know, you never know who you're going to run into at the studios here at the University of Northwestern. And I just had the pleasure of running into Jean-Sonny Revolt. You lost a little bit of your childhood. You grew up fast. At 13, you're on your own.
Yes.
You know, obviously becoming a mature man of God. And you had a big chunk of your boyhood removed. And I'm not hearing any fatherly advice along the way. Did you have a dad in your life at that point, or no dad in your life? How did that work out?
Okay. My mom passed away in 1991.
Okay.
And I was 2 at that time, and I had to live with my godmother and went there. From there, I know when I started to go to school, I got to be kicked out. Like, we have, like, it's like a whole year school. I got, like, I did not have the chance to finish the whole year. Like, 6 months, I got kicked out for money or not having books. Not being able to finish it. Mm-hmm. Like kindergarten, I didn't have a chance to go through kindergarten.
And you didn't go to kindergarten?
No.
Which was the three hardest years of my life, but go ahead.
I didn't go.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I didn't maybe go there. So.
Yeah.
I'm teasing. So I did not. And my father, he was there but couldn't really take care of us. You know, at some point going to the Dominican Republic, living there and doing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And... can't help us. And now, you know, a lot of us in Haiti, that's a lot of kids, they go through that.
Mm-hmm.
Like their parents can't help them. They sent them to, so if there's somebody that can help them, they just send them to them. And what happened is like most of the time, they don't really take good care of them. I got kicked out. And before that, I used to live in like gardens. Mm-hmm. I spent 3 days in a garden, like not sleeping in a house, like being out there. I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember 4 or so people used to beat me. Like, it's crazy. Like, I don't know. Maybe I throw too much things.
No, it's all interesting.
Maybe this can help people too to, like, you know, I don't know, grow their faith in some way. So it's tough.
Well, I'm just trying to put it all in my mind. And I think here's a young boy who loses his mother at 2. So you probably have next to no memories of her, do you?
I remember, you know, her face in some way, but can't remember, and
right.
I miss her so much, too.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
And now you're 13 on your own, and you're living in Haiti as an adult with 80% unemployment, and I would imagine that brings with it chaos, crime, and lots of immorality, and you're trying to live
as a
follower of Jesus.
A lot. Even through friends I have, like... some of them I have to play dominoes with them, like try to see how I can help. Mm-hmm. And still, some of them are jealous too because they know through my life how I fight. Mm-hmm. You know, I might have opportunities to do stuff like even earn money. I help them too. But some of them, it's hard for them to go to church because they would say, oh, I don't have clothes. Oh, I don't have this. Oh, I don't have that. So, I don't know. It's just tough.
Yeah.
But really, usually, it's not a matter of clothes or this. But most of the time, too, it is too, because some churches might not let you. They will let you, but you will see like people like, oh, you know, it's like, okay, he's not that appropriate. You know,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So,
when you left in November, would you say the country or the community in which you lived had people that were hopeful or not hopeful?
Some for sure were not. I'm glad too.
That's true in America as well. So
it's not specific
to Haiti, but just the way you described it, I would think there would be a high incidence of people feeling hopeless.
A lot of people, a lot. And I was blessed to meet my, I would say, girlfriend at the moment, Brittany mm-hmm. Stokoe, and let's say I was blessed because there was a senior living, I would call it. A lady, she is, I would say, about her 80s, mm-hmm. taking care about some ladies that they were close to just pass away.
Uh-huh.
Thank goodness she, through my fiance, she could talk to her mom about it. I'm talking about Sue Stokoe. She just talked to her people from school. They could send some stuff to those ladies, like clothes, curtain, and stuff for them to use. That was a blessing to do that. Like those ladies, it's
mm-hmm.
bad.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine going to a house, they are having just a bed, but it's not bed, no sheet on it. You can find probably no mattress sometimes. Now having like be able to get some towels, some curtains and some other stuff, that was a blessing. So mm-hmm. that was a blessing at that moment to go there. Like just to say that some places, it is tough. Some kids, they are going through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a reason too. In an orphanage, I was working as a security guard before I come here. So there's a guy, I was helping him in some way. I give him some money, lend some money to him to buy some products. So I help him go out with him, buy stuff, and come to sell to tourists. When they do, when I left, it was like 500 US.
Mm-hmm.
So he made up that and saved that money. The key was I told him, here is my life. Pretty much every day, you know, we talk. And I used to do Bible study for them too. Here is my life. I don't want you to go through that. And you're 18 now, you're in an orphanage. I'm telling you, if you don't take your life seriously, you know, you might not be able to be someone in your life. Nobody will see you or something like that. Just to say that, you know, I was helping him, just at least
yeah.
someone, like,
yeah.
in some way to get
That's
out
great.
Of that
yeah,
tough
so
situation.
So you're in Haiti in November, and now it's, is it March, and you're in Minnesota. What happened? Why are you here?
Oh, you know, I was mentioning my girlfriend.
You did drop
we
a
got
hint.
Married
oh,
in December. Oh yeah,
I
December
knew there
14th
was, gonna...
was the big day.
What day?
December 14th.
Oh, fantastic.
That's when we got married. And, oh, thank you.
How did you meet your bride?
I just have to say, Mom Sue, I call her Mom Sue. So
yeah.
She was a big deal in that too.
Yeah.
So
that's your mother-in-law.
Oh yeah.
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 And you speak very highly of her.
Oh, she deserves it. Let me tell you. I mean, she's doing a lot.
I wish she was here that I could meet her. That would be fantastic.
It's a blessing. Yeah,
it would be a blessing.
Great family.
Yeah. So did you meet your wife in Haiti?
Okay. I did. I did for sure. Here is the thing. To be able to work at that organization, I met them. I was having my little paper in my head. Whenever I see an English speaker, you know, try to talk to them and
sharpen
their
skills.
Yeah, they teach me something and write it down.
Yeah.
And they were passing in front of my church and saw them. I said, hey, guys, can I help you? And they said, oh, your English is impeccable. I said, I don't know what you're saying. Can you please tell me what it means? They tell me, and I just write it down. 3 weeks or so later, they said, do you want to work with us? And I'm telling you, I was pretty much the number one interpreter, like working as an interpreter or translator
uh-huh.
or from English to Creole, like teacher. Like,
yeah.
Oh, man, that was a big deal. That's how I met her. August 2016 was the biggest day ever, you know, just to meet her. It was boom.
The second biggest day.
Best, you know, sometimes we forget about it. Like the, I don't know how to say that in English. It's like what started with it. It's
Begin?
Like, yeah, even let's say you're passing somewhere, a radio was loud, but they say, Jesus is the Savior. You might not even think of it, mm-hmm. but it was the big, you know, it was what brought you here. It's what, you know, bring you all the way with here. The earthquake was, you know, the background. That's why I said one of the biggest. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And what are you doing now?
Now.
Yes.
I'm with my in-law. We are trying to be able to go to school.
Fantastic.
Yeah. You know, I would love to be in the medical field. Yeah. I just say medical field, but I'm pretty much.
Yeah.
I love,
got stuck in radio,
you know, stuff. And
yeah.
Trying
yeah.
to, you know, see if we can go to school.
That's fantastic. So, yeah. Well, yeah. This has been a lot of fun. Jean Sony Revolt has been my guest in studio. And what a great story. And I just love the way God has orchestrated your life, put all the pieces together. And you're a boy who loses his mother at 2, and by 13 you're living on your own. You're kind of a street urchin, aren't you? I mean, you're living with your grandma,
godmother.
But you're still.
I was, but after that, I was living on my own.
You're just out on your own, making it happen.
Yes.
And yet,
yes.
God keeps His sovereign hand upon you throughout all of that, and protects you, and guides you, and leads you, and. You put your faith in Christ, and all of a sudden you're...
He's amazing. Might not even think of him. Like,
no. Oh, he is amazing.
You never know where he's going to take you.
I say that 9 times a day on this show. He is amazing.
He is.
Yeah. And now you've got a beautiful bride and an incredible mother-in-law.
I'm
from
sure
what I
would
hear.
Love to love meet him.
To meet
he's amazingly great.
Yeah,
I love her.
Oh, and I'd love
it's
to meet her someday.
It's a blessing to have,
oh, yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
she
well,
is.
Thank you so much for visiting in the studio.
Thank you so much, too. And just so you know, like KTIS... I listen to it all the time.
Yeah,
I tell my wife, please don't touch my KTIS.
Right.
I call the radio my KTIS.
Right.
So.
Well, I pretty much just listen to Faith Radio. So, all right, that wraps up my time with Jean Sony Revolt. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I am delighted to have in my studio Lonnie Evans, who is the Director of Volunteers and Outreach at Loaves and Fishes here in the Minneapolis area. And he was nice enough to bring his daughter in, Elena. And when I heard the story and I saw Dad gush over his daughter, I thought, I need to hear more of this story. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks
yes.
for having us.
So, Lonnie, set up the introduction of your beautiful daughter.
Sure. Well, Elena came home from Russia in 2001, and she became our middle kid right away. So she came home to two brothers, Peter and Tommy.
So you adopted her?
We adopted her
okay.
from Russia.
Make it clear.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. And so, we knew before we got married that Betsy and I would be adopting someday, at least really felt called. That if we got married and had kids that we would want to adopt. And so after we had two little boys, we still felt like we had room in our hearts and our home for this unknown but anticipated child. And turns out it was Elena.
Yeah. But talk about how you and your wife had this little revelation that you were going to put it out there for adopting another child and how the Lord sort of... took over and started working out details.
You bet. Yeah. So Betsy and I sat down for a date at one point, and we were pursuing adoption and looking into domestic adoption, Latin America, and we just weren't finding anything clicking. I don't mean anything in a disconnected way, but didn't find a child specifically that we really felt called to... to be ours. And we were sitting down to dinner one day and separate of each other had come to the conclusion that we were interested in adopting a child with special needs, not knowing that the other was thinking that very same thing. And
see, that to me is crazy.
Yeah.
You're both having that thought independently.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. It's still crazy to me too.
Okay, good.
And I get excited when I think back to that conversation. I get excited when I think back to the way that we believe God orchestrated it and couldn't be confused as something that we could have put together.
Yeah. Now, your sons neither are special needs kids, right?
No.
Okay.
Nope. Yep.
Yeah.
And, you know, The interesting thing, I guess, is that we don't think of Elena that way either.
Nor should you.
Right, right. I'm certainly as a limitation or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I guess as part of telling her story and sharing her story, absolutely, that's part of the deal.
Yeah. So from the time you and Betsy decided that you would pursue a special needs child from another country,
mm-hmm.
Talk about the time process.
Sure. Well, we sat down on September 10th of 2000 and had that discussion. September 11, 2000, Betsy, my wife, was approached by an aunt who had a client within her business who had adopted from an orphanage in Russia and was aware of Elena at the time, unbeknownst to us. And her aunt approached Betsy on September 11, 2000 to say, hey, or ask, have you and Lonnie ever thought about adopting a kid with special needs? And it was September 12 of 2000, so the next day, that Betsy called me up and said, Lonnie, there's a little girl in Russia named Elena. And I said, let's go for it. And 365 days later, Elena was taking her first steps at Shriners Hospital on prosthetic legs.
And so I'll get to Elena in a minute because she's sitting here beaming and you wouldn't think for a nanosecond that your daughter has any limitations whatsoever because she doesn't.
Right.
Yeah. So when she arrived at Shriners Hospital, was she being fitted for prosthetic legs?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And we had done some connecting with Shriners in the U of M prior to Elena coming home to research her condition, and Shriners did a really great job of prepping, especially our boys, her brothers, so that when she came home and was fitted with prostheses, that it wasn't the first time they saw prosthetic legs and arms, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So they really helped prep us, and it was just a great place of encouragement and accomplishment. And so, yeah, we've had a longstanding great relationship over there.
So you started trusting God instantly on this adoption process. I mean, right away from the start, you were all in, which I find fascinating and I love.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I say thank you, but we don't take credit for that. We really felt called to it. We felt that there weren't, but I guess by the time we felt like Elena specifically was to be ours, that we didn't think there would be any barriers in the way, not out of naivete, but just really believing that it's not something that we just willed or wanted to have happen. Yes, we wanted it and her, but we really felt God calling us and pairing us up so that there really weren't any things that were going to get in the way. And so we went into it with a lot of unanswered questions and open-ended things, but a great confidence that it was going to happen and Elena would eventually be ours. And so it was really a really cool, cool process.
Yeah. When did you first see a picture of Elena?
Oh, boy.
And did you go over to Russia to get her?
We did, but pretty soon after we targeted Elena, specifically we started to get photos and things. I know the first color pictures we ever got, we received the day of my grandfather's funeral.
Hmm.
And so it went from being black and white to color, and I can still picture pictures of Elena, eating an orange and kind of a little semi-smile and everything. And we never pursued Elena because of how she looked or anything, but, we just got super excited and just another level of excitement, I guess, with those pictures.
And when you talk about Elena's disability, and we can obviously talk to her about it as well, but was she missing one leg, two legs?
None. She had both feet removed at Shriners.
Okay.
So she had both of her feet when she came home.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
So, Elena, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Pretty cool dad. Pretty cool mom.
Pretty cool to
brothers.
Hear this.
What?
Especially mom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I was stunned when I saw family pictures when your dad showed me a picture of you and your mom. And I would swear, with the last dollar I have, unequivocally, she gave birth to you.
That's what everyone says. Since I was really young, everybody was like, you guys look so alike.
You do. It's stunning. It absolutely is stunning. I would love to show the picture to the listeners. I can't do that, but I would love to show it. Tell me about what it was like moving, getting to grow up in this family.
Well, I don't remember the whole adoption process. I mean, I don't, at that age, I don't remember the amputation or the adoption process.
Mm-hmm.
But growing up, it was just, I just integrated right away.
Yeah.
I was just part of this family.
Yeah. So did you have a medical condition that required amputation of your feet?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm not exactly sure
That's
what
fine.
It was called, but
yeah.
It was where my feet were sort of curved in, and then I was born with partial or no shin bones. And so that inhibited me from walking. So the amputation was really the only way to go to be able to walk and play sports and just be involved in just any regular way any other mm-hmm. kid would do.
So you got involved in sports at a young age. And mm-hmm. I mean, was there anything that you felt you were not able to do?
Not really.
Yeah. So.
I didn't have that attitude, I'd say, growing up.
Yeah. And I know part of that is from the Lord, that attitude. Part of that's from your folks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you must have had a bunch of great friend support. Did you have friend support yeah. or did you find yourself?
Oh, yeah. And growing up, my friends, they didn't care. They didn't care I had prosthetic legs.
Oh, yeah.
I was no different to them,
yeah.
Which was a real encouragement and just allowed me to integrate into sports and friend groups and school and just everything just normally like any other kid.
Mm-hmm. When people ask you, Elena, about your life and your adoption, can I ask you what kind of questions they ask you?
A lot of just what happened. If they ask anything, it's a lot of just, you know, looks or just out of curiosity, they don't really know how to approach it.
Yeah, as do I right now.
Yeah.
That's why I'm cheating and trying to get questions that other people have asked.
I've grown up just kind of learning that like,
yeah.
You know, and if I was in their situation, I'd probably be curious and
yeah.
maybe not approach because I wouldn't yeah. want to say something that could hurt.
Your birth family, do you have siblings that you know of?
Oh, my birth family.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's a closed adoption.
Okay. It was a closed adoption.
Yep.
Okay. And then how long were you in the adoption facility or the, what would I call it?
An orphanage.
What's
yeah.
it called?
Orphanage?
An orphanage. Yeah. Do we have those anymore in America? Orphanages? I don't think we do we?
You know what? I don't know honestly or officially if we do. I know that, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we did have that type of setup here. And so Elena came from the hospital and went to the orphanage for
okay.
3.5 years.
Wow. That's
yeah.
a long time to be at an orphanage.
Yeah.
And do you have any recollection of that time?
I don't. And
yeah.
we have a few pictures, so they feel like memories, but
okay.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I think
and
it's
do
just
do you
pictures.
Know how, if you were held and loved and touched and all that?
I think I was.
Okay, good.
I think I knew what affection was. And
nice.
I'm pretty sure my mom says I came knowing how to brush my teeth and brush my hair. And yeah. So
yeah.
I did know what affection was and what love was and touch. And
yeah.
Yeah, and we saw, I think we saw some signs that you couldn't fake. For example, after Elena was ours and the court said yes and everything, and we'd visit Elaine each day, but now we're there to get her and take her with us, and we're going to stop in Moscow on our way back to the States. And there were interactions between the caregivers at the orphanage and Elena that I don't think were faked. They certainly weren't done to make us, feel like we made a good choice or anything. They seemed to be really natural, where some of the ladies would go up and they'd grab Elena's little feet and give her little kisses and things. Just really affectionate. That, again, I just don't think you would fake, and it certainly wasn't strategic timing-wise.
Yeah.
She was ours, and they were saying goodbye.
Yeah, wow. Fantastic. My in-studio guests are Lonnie and Elena. We're going to take a little break, and we'll come back with lots more. Welcome back to the show. I have in studio Lonnie Evans and his beautiful daughter, Elena, and we're chatting about the adoption of Elena. She came from Russia. And Lonnie, let me ask you, when you picked her up and brought her back, did you know that there was trouble with her feet?
Yes, we were pretty well aware of her condition prior to getting to Russia. All along in the adoption process, we were very mindful of her condition, doing research, whether it's at Shriners or the U of M, and looking into what was up ahead for Elena and for our family. Mm-hmm. And we had a pretty good sense.
So when you go into the orphanage for the first time, does your heart break into 1,000 pieces or 2,000 pieces?
Oh, yeah, even smaller, a lot more. But yeah, absolutely. There's so many different emotions, and, you know, I can close my eyes right now and visualize the sounds and the smells and the sight. And so it's as fresh as if it were today. There's so many different things going through your head and heart. And, it's just unbelievably powerful.
Mm-hmm. So you are a junior at Bethel.
I am. I'm a third year.
Just around the corner. And you have developed quite a heart for mission work. And tell me how you recently went to the Ukraine. Do I have that right?
I did, yep.
Tell me what that was like and what you did there. Was it
It was amazing. It was amazing. I was able to work with a camp called Camp Maximum.
Mm-hmm.
And they have sort of an unofficial partnership with Trout Lake Camp. So they're trying to create a trout lake sort of in Ukraine. And I got to work with sports camps and ELL camps and English camps throughout 7 weeks of this past summer, just pouring into those kids, and those kids just poured into me and built a lot of connections, and it was just incredible. Mm-hmm. To be there and just see what they do, and just a camp that's really not experienced anywhere else in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a different type of camp, and that's kind of their
that's
their logo. The translation's a little funny, but I think it's a new type of camp or a new camp for kids.
Yeah. Has there been something in your life that you've overcome that maybe God helped you with, that you were once shy, now you're not, you once, you know, didn't want to be in this environment, now you do? Is there something like that? Maybe not.
I'm not positive.
Yeah, okay. All right. Dad, maybe you've recognized something in her life that you've seen that maybe she was a little reluctant to do, and now she's just shining on the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that camp is really symbolic of that, which is to be vulnerable and to let people see her legs without pants on, but, you know, wearing shorts and being visible and vulnerable that way. And I think it took a lot for her to do that, because I think oftentimes that was the cover up was the way of kind of dealing with it. And so to let your guard down for the sake of other people was, I think, a huge hurdle that Elena, you know, jumped over, but allowed God to work in her heart to bring that about physically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Elena, did you feel that was maybe something that was holding you back a little bit, or did you feel a little insecure about that? Or
throughout my time in Ukraine?
Yeah.
I'd say that was hard. It was hard to open up that way,
uh-huh.
especially because a lot of kids in Ukraine have never seen that before.
Okay.
Ever. So it was just so foreign to them. So it was hard to be vulnerable that way. But it was also a great time to open up and be able to talk about it with them.
Yeah.
And just, again, back to that curiosity part.
Yeah.
They're so curious. They just want to know.
Totally.
So
it was
cool to be able to.
And you
to
felt God's grace kind of pouring into your life at that time as well. You know, sometimes you recognize it in your rearview mirror. You know, you get home and you go, wow, God did some great work
That's
in my
so true.
Life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes when you're in the middle or the moment, you don't see it quite as clear as you do when you look back and go, that was pretty transformative. That was pretty cool.
That's how it's been this year. Even just the school year, looking back at the summer.
Yeah.
So many moments where I'm like, yeah.
And now you still have a big heart for continuing to do that kind of outreach,
mm-hmm.
don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love to go back.
Oh, that's
and
so
just
awesome.
Do other trips like this too.
Yeah. So what in particular do you want to do more pursuing? Do you want to be helping people with disabilities? Is that on your heart?
I'd love to, yeah.
Okay.
I would love to.
Yeah.
In athletics, I would love to be able to go in athletics and do international work or international communication work, any way that I can be able to share my story alongside my work.
Mm-hmm. And Lonnie, I know I don't want to get the focus off Elena because she's the star of the show today, but you do work with, and this sounds like something, two words that shouldn't be together, you are involved with blind hockey. Go figure. I don't even know how that works.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we just finished our first year, so we're the Minnesota Wild Blind Hockey Program, and we started in October, wrapped up about a week ago or so, and we have folks who have up to 10% vision learning to play ice hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And I think out of 20-some people on our roster, a couple of our guys had any experience playing before. And so most of our players, it was a new thing for them. And it was really amazing season, primarily practices and some scrimmages, but just amazing season of breaking down barriers and ramping up expectations and creating opportunities. And just like Elena made reference to her trip to Ukraine, I mean, as much as I gave to people, I got so much more out
right.
of it. And, you know, you hear that in those types of experiences, but it's so true. And we're doing some planning and looking forward to next season to crank it up.
Yeah, when I saw that news story on the blind hockey, I was relieved to see that the puck is substantially bigger. And every time you hit it with a stick, it makes noise. I
yes.
go, well, that's helpful.
It is. Well, yeah. And I know to dodge pucks as well. So
oh, good.
I don't mind that.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. So, Elena, what message would you want kids with disabilities to know? Because you have done such a, God's done such great work in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just know that you're going to be a huge source of encouragement to so many in your life.
Yeah, thank you. I think something that I've really just learned throughout the course of my life is that you can't let other people define your abilities or disabilities. And you just have to be yourself because that's how you're made. That's how God made you. And having other people define that for you, it restricts you. It doesn't let you be who you are. And so to me, it's just so important to be yourself, to be who God made you to be.
Mm-hmm. And then do you what are your vocational plans right now? What are you studying in school?
Communication studies.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice. So you want to continue to do what with that?
Well, I think part of the reason
field?
I chose that is you can go a lot of different ways
with
that. But I'm in organizational and relational comm. So I'd love to do, I have an event management emphasis. So I'd like to do events, corporate events, international business.
Mm-hmm.
Marketing. I mean, there's a lot of directions I could go. I'd love to do.
What about any counsel to couples that are anticipating, thinking about, praying about Lonnie doing what you and Betsy did?
Well, I would say the key would be the prayer piece, because I think Betsy and I both say that we recognize that adoption is an amazing, wonderful thing, but it's not for everybody. And so I guess to continue to pray and pursue God's calling or answer in that. But yeah, I guess, you know, anytime we had opportunities to share with people, we always wanted to encourage people with our story, but also encourage people by the willingness to listen and not just share and talk and tell, but to be open and listen. So I guess to network with people who have done something similarly and get as much information as possible before you determine. And then I guess once you hit that tipping point, just to go all out and not for us to not go a certain distance with it and say, well, you know, we can pull back. No, we felt called to do it, but we're going to do this and God's going to bring it about.
Mm-hmm. And Elena, when you hear about stories and I hear how important those first several years are in the formation of any person's life,
mm-hmm.
And yet you belong in the family of God because, you know, you're a believer and you've got wonderful parents and you had great friends. But there must be other stories as well of, do you wake up ever and go, huh, I wonder what my original beginnings were?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I've thought about that.
Yeah, I would imagine so.
Yep.
You know, and that's no disrespect to your parents or family at all,
no.
Right?
Again, that curiosity.
It's just curiosity, yeah.
Where did this all begin?
Yeah. Because, Lonnie, I know that there's been other people I know who have adopted international children, and they've been very difficult, very trying,
yeah.
You know, and or any adoption can be yep. very difficult and trying.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I do recall a quick conversation that we had when the kids were little. We did a book and tea night, and it was several years ago. And one night our oldest said, he looked at my wife and said, Mom, I came out of your tummy, didn't I? thought, what is he doing? And then I look over, and sure enough, Tommy, the youngest, says, yeah, me too. And Elena looked over, and she said, I didn't, but I'm yours now. So we knew she had it figured out.
Don't do this to me. Please don't do this to me. All right, I have to wrap it up. Kleenex, tissue. Thank you. All right, Lonnie and Elena have been my in-studio guests. Thank you so much for coming in. It's been an absolute delight to hear your story.
Thank you, Bill.
Thanks for having us.
We'll take a little break and be right back. All right, we'll take a little break. When we come back, we're going to have a great second hour coming up with Russell Jarvis, all the way from the Hartford area, Pastor Jay Abramson from Valley Community Church in Avon, Connecticut, is going to be joining me because I love our friends in the Hartford area. So I'm looking forward to spending time with Jay as well. We'll take a short break. We'll be back with lots more in hour two.